Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Billy Dees, and I'm here today on behalf of HumorOutcast.com. And that's all part of a great group of publishers, including HO Press, Shore House Books, Corner Office Books. We want to give a big shout out to Donna Kavanaugh. If you haven't had a chance yet, do check out HumorOutcast.com, the place to take a humor break. There's new content posted there pretty much every day. Some very talented folks over there. On the phone with me today is Mary Farr. How are you doing, Mary?
Hi, I'm wonderful. Thank you. Having a nice spring day here. But you're making me kind of smile because I actually write humor for Donna, even though that's not the topic we're going to talk about today. But I do. I was just writing a blog about the humor of going to church on Zoom. It's mighty silly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's funny. That sounds interesting. I'm going to have to check that out. Mary has been on the program before, and she is the author of the book, If I Could Mend Your Heart. And our podcast today is going to kind of deal with a lot of the themes that's in that book, which is, you know, around the subject of grief and managing grief and how different types of sorrow can be certainly due to the loss of life, but any event or circumstance which will impact our lives. Many people are strongly being impacted right now by the COVID-19 and all of the quarantines and all of the isolation that is causing a lot of problems for folks. And that's something we're going to talk about today. Even though these are difficult times and, you know, it's a complex subject, but this is not going to be a heavy, depressing discussion. Mary's message is that oftentimes carving out an alternative and positive path in life can be part of how we manage stress and difficult times. Now, you're somewhere different than when we last talked. Where are you at now, Mary? What part of the world are you coming from?
Well, I haven't gone too far. I'm in Minnesota, and I'm from Wisconsin originally. Mm-hmm. And now I live in a little country town west of the Twin Cities, west of Minneapolis, cute little town called Mound, Minnesota.
Okay.
Excuse me. That's and love it. It's just I think I like being out of the city. I grew up in a small town in Wisconsin, so I kind of enjoyed that. And I've always had horses. And so lots of reasons to like the country. And that's where I am again.
That is fantastic. Now, your career, you've dealt with helping people to recover from various things, trauma and so forth, and to give them hope. Mm-hmm. How did your journey on this career path begin?
Well, it actually began in Eau Claire. I am a member of the Episcopal Church, and I was ordained in the Episcopal Church in 1984. And that was a time when there really weren't a lot of women being ordained, particularly in this tradition. So I started looking around at where I might like to work, and even trying to find a position in a church was not that simple. So during the course of my studies, divinity studies, we were expected to take a course. It's a several-year course called Clinical Pastoral Education.
Okay.
And really that's really about teaching ministers how to be a minister in a hospital and in a healthcare setting. So it's a very different focus. It certainly includes elements of faith traditions, not always Christianity. I've worked as a director of hospital chaplaincy, and I had people from all kinds of faith traditions working for me.
Oh, okay.
But so basically what that amounts to is you, rather than thinking about church doctrine or theology, it's more focused on the practice.
Okay.
And the practice is really about compassion and presence, being a presence to people who are suffering in one way or the other.
Yeah.
But I loved, I enjoyed hearing people's stories. And I think just the idea of meeting many, many interesting people, meeting them at times of their lives when they told the truth, talked about subjects that were important, things that I always took a great interest in, but I also am a writer. So creating stories and thinking about how this experience can help others has always been an interest to me as well.
Yeah.
So I've put together the two. Communications, I've really made my living as a communicator, as a writer.
Yeah.
And an author as well, but more as a writer for healthcare and a number of fields. But it's the storytelling and the opportunity to meet people at really important times in their lives and learning about them. So that's really how it got started. And then combining that with writing.
Sure. Now, you seem to have a pretty consistent theme, I'll say, a certain message regarding certain types of losses and setbacks that we all have in life. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you feel it is important to incorporate these messages into the times of today, and especially with all that's going on with the quarantines and everything else?
Well, I think I kind of begin from the premise that change and loss are just plain part of the fabric that we live in.
Yeah.
And to think otherwise, to think that we're going to live at the high points and the perfect life is just kind of certainly naive, if not foolish. So having said that, I think my approach is how do we create a larger picture in which we can experience joy and good health and well-being by living with all these things together. I mean, what joy is really not about specific high points. It's about how do we combine our setbacks, and those setbacks we have all the time. Can we look at them as opportunities to be creative? My answer to that would be yes. Can we look at maybe qualities that we each have that we've not thought about that can play a role in our being well and our recovering from losses? Just think of all the things we lose. We have kids leaving home. We have divorces. We have illness. We have many of good things that fit into all of that. But to think that we're not going to escape, or that we're going to escape without running into some major factor, is really naive. So let's prepare for it, and let's think about how we can come up with a balance and a sense of renewal after we have these kinds of experiences.
Yeah.
And I mean, life is really about renewal. So looking at it in that respect seems a little more wholesome and hopeful.
Sure. Absolutely.
Does that make sense? Because
absolutely.
So now we're having a terrible loss. We really are. And but then, you know, that requires some introspection. What really matters to us?
Yeah.
I know, for example, this business of isolation. I feel fortunate to be in a little town, but I've gone across the street and there's a little Methodist church that has a giant community gardens in the backyard. And so I rented a garden space. Well, I'm really looking forward to this. This is very simple, but it's renewing to me.
Sure.
And I think looking at those things that are really helpful for us, simple things on a daily basis, really help with isolation in the case that we're in right now, and fear.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a scary time.
Absolutely it is. And we're we're entering into uncharted territory for sure. Now, speaking of isolation, a lot of us may have friends, we may have family that aren't dealing with it too well. And we've talked about this before, but it can be very awkward, I guess, is maybe a good word to approach somebody who's in a painful state, in an emotional painful state. What advice, what would be some of your suggestions approaching someone who's in, it can be grief, maybe some sort of loss, maybe their loss of lifestyle now. How would you, what would be your some of your suggestions for how to approach that?
Well, I'm going to talk as a chaplain right now. So one of the things, and I worked many years in a children's hospital, and I can remember one day talking to one of our neonatologists, and that's the physician that takes care of the tiny newborns that are born too early. And many, many bad things happened as well as good things, but loss of life and disabilities and things that are tragic for families. But so we talked one day about his role and our role as chaplains.
Okay.
And I said, well, what is there a particular thing that you can say that you think applies to both of us? And he said, yes, I can. He said, there are three things: show up, listen, and tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It's right on. And it's what really is important, even though it's awkward sometimes and scary for us to talk. You know, we think, oh, my gosh, we're bothering somebody. Oh, it's a private time. Oh, it's this. Or I don't know what to say anyway. That's really not true, because we don't really have to say a lot.
Yeah.
My daughter had a friend who lost a baby during childbirth, and she was so desperate. She was not living in the same town at that time. And I said, you know what? Call her up and tell her you love her and you'll talk to her later. And so it can be quite simple. It doesn't have to be a script. It doesn't have to be heavy, but leaving food at the door, or, you know, offering to take the pets for a walk or pick up children at school. They're pretty basic things that make people feel less isolated, but they don't have to be too complicated. The main thing is, don't be afraid of it. But we don't have a lot of practice.
Yeah.
We don't get a lot of practice. But I thought that show up, listen. And listening is probably the hard part, because we want to fix everything.
Sure.
So it's pretty hard to just take in a story without judgment. And it's really important when we do it, though. People who feel heard also feel cared for.
Oh, absolutely.
I really believe that's true.
Yeah, that would certainly make sense. When you're offering condolences or just comforting somebody, you've mentioned before when we talked about, I'll call them little platitudes of one kind or another. And one of the ones that I wrote down here, this just makes me nuts when I hear people say it was meant to be, you know. And I know that it's meant in some good way. But when I'm in that state and somebody says something like that, I don't know why it grates on my nerves. Can you speak about that a little bit? What are some of the things that you should offer up?
Well, first of all, I think those kind of statements, and that could be, everything happens for a reason.
Yes, that's another one.
Oh, God wouldn't give you any more. You're strong. God wouldn't give you any more than you can handle. Well, that's not true. Frankly, I've talked to an awful lot of people who have a lot more than they can handle. Yeah. I have felt that way, and I bet maybe you have too.
Oh,
don't tell me something like that. This is more than I can handle. Thank you very much. But I think I want to be very cautious here, because it's not fair to blame when, again, I think there's an awkwardness and a desire to try to fix something.
Yeah.
And suggest that, you know, everything will turn out all right. It might or it might not. I think if giving one an opportunity to be heard and just simply say, tell me how you feel, tell me what's happened, and just simply listen without judgment. I can give you a couple of examples that I have seen, for example, not terribly uncommon, especially in a children's hospital with a birth center and a newborn intensive care center, a mother who loses a child at birth or maybe a premature birth.
Yeah.
And a well-meaning friend will say, well, you know, you're young. Go home and get pregnant again.
Yeah.
I think there's no way to understand the pain of that loss unless you ask her and give her the time and the space to recover from that without trying to fix it. So that would be one. And the other thing is, I think we, in our effort to be helpful, really want to suggest, why don't you do this? Or someone, a husband has died and now trying to fix them up with a neighbor or something. All well-intended, but just stop and think and listen.
Yeah.
And that's really hard to do without talking. I had a chaplain once who said, I'm so glad I finally learned to take every opportunity to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a big lesson.
Yeah. Oh, sure it is.
Boy, yeah. We want to jump right in there and try to fix. Of course we do. And, you know, we feel badly. It isn't, nobody means to be unkind, I don't think.
Yeah.
But being brave, just kind of being brave and sitting with the discomfort of somebody who might cry, who might express real frustration, it's not going to hurt.
Yeah.
So just simply let it happen and not be afraid to come into the room. That's the other thing, you know, people are kind of afraid to come into the room.
Yeah.
You don't have to be. You will be blessed for it if you can just be courageous to do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, listening across the board is a lost art. And certainly in a time like this, it's so much more important in the first place, because being heard and trying to put yourself in that situation accurately is very important to try to understand what the person is going through. So along those veins, you know, you had mentioned, you know, someone has passed away, and a lot of times people do want to try something. So what are some of the little things that you can do in that situation to provide comfort?
I think things that feel like sort of routines. Now, I live in a townhome community, but it's a very, I would say it's a gregarious, it's designed in such a way so we see our neighbors. And I have a neighbor who has had a terrible loss with one of her children.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's an addiction situation that's turned into a life-threatening one.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, I just one day walked past her, and she has a little dog, and I said, how about me in the morning so I don't have to walk in the dark, rather than saying, how about fix your walk in the morning?
Yeah.
I wanted a partner. It's winter. I don't really want to go out in the dark and take a fall. And would you like to do this? And she said yes. And it wasn't always easy to get up and get ready, dressed for cold weather, but we've done it all winter long. And she and I both have found a great deal of comfort in doing this, including watching, going down the Dakota Trail and looking at what's starting to grow and bud and bloom.
Yeah.
But it's kind of simple routine stuff. Then a couple of others who've had equal terrible health things going on, and they're really isolated because they can't be out anywhere, started cooking little things, leaving cookies, they sound kind of old, homespun and simple, but you know, simple's not bad.
No, not at all.
So those kinds of things have been helpful. I do think if you can kind of find a way, if you understand a person's routine or what they need, if you get a little creative, you can find a way to get inside of that. Just night before last, I looked out and here came a birthday parade of cars through down the street and around in front of a girl. She's a high school senior who was graduating and was feeling, of course, very sad and locked up and at home and everything.
Yeah.
And here came all these cars with balloons and honking and whatnot. And I know we've seen this happen. We've seen this on television, but I'm telling you, that girl was just delighted beyond tears.
Oh, I bet.
So yeah, it was a pretty simple thing to do. You know, they were just bringing balloons and stuffed toys and singing and whatnot. But I think trying to understand what a person's experience is, I'm noticing people are having all different kinds of experiences with this COVID, sheltering at home. Of course, we know isolation is one, but the loss of work is also the loss of routines and a feeling of not having anything to contribute. I can find myself feeling that way. Well, who cares? You know, I don't have anything to offer here anymore. I like to contribute something.
Sure.
So, but kind of being creative and trying to take the focus away from myself, because that's pretty easy to get stuck in that hole too.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just think, all right, is there one person in my neighborhood that I believe is struggling? And what simple thing could I do to bring a little joy to that person's day? The woman next door to me, lost a very young couple, lost her husband. She got two strapping boys who must eat her out of house and home. So I kind of go toward food, you know. I came up with the meatloaf and the things like that.
Yeah.
Well, it made one day a little easier for her.
Sure. And sometimes, you know, that can mean so much.
Yeah.
One little break.
One little break. It doesn't have to be extraordinary.
Yes.
But I think just for the courage to step into someone's life might be the biggest step.
Yeah.
We think, oh boy, we better leave them alone. Leave them alone. You know, they've got surely somebody else in their family is talking with them and everything will be fine. But I'd walk right up, and if they say no, thank you, fine. But
right.
Doesn't hurt to try.
Absolutely. In these times, and I know that hope is very much a part of your themes. It's one of those things that you kind of have running through everything that you do. And, you know, obviously hope can be for a lot of people. Maybe they're isolated. Maybe they're not working. Finances are becoming a problem. There doesn't seem to be a definitive end to a lot of the quarantines and some other things. So it's real easy to, you know, jump into that hole. What would be your message of hope for people across the board in whatever situation they may be in?
I mentioned a little something at the beginning about this idea of life is always about, everything's about renewal. You know, everything grows and is renewed in the spring.
Yes.
Everything is kind of about renewal. We get sick, then we get well.
Yeah.
So I think this idea of transforming and finding renewal is a real one. I think that's a real possibility. So I had, speaking of Donna Kavanaugh, I visited her about a year ago and did a presentation to a big group at a beautiful Episcopal church downtown Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And it was a nice group of people. And then we got to the end of the presentation, and some fellow in the front row stood up and said to me, well, I'd just like to tell you that I'm homeless. And I think he maybe had a street ministry of some kind.
Mm.
And he must have had an association, at least somewhat of an association, with the church members.
Okay.
Maybe that was a safe place to bring people and from time to time. Anyway, he said, I'm on the street. My colleagues and my friends are homeless. How do I talk to them about hope? Well, that created quite a conversation. And it really, I went home and I thought, you know, you need to think even more about this, because we can't just say we're not going to run around and hope for the best, or there's always something to hope for, or whatever. That doesn't help.
Yeah.
So I wrote a little something, and it's just a couple lines long, but let me read it to you.
Sure.
And because there's a kernel in it that I think matters. And so here's what I've written. I believe hope is larger than wishes. Hope believes that life can emerge from even the most difficult circumstances. Hope defies all boundaries and refuses to accept misery as an option. And hope is a sign that we can trust and anticipate future good. And that's the part I think is really possible. So someone may have died. We can't fix that. A relationship may have ended, a job, any number of things may have happened that we cannot fix. But I honestly believe that we can always anticipate future good. And it may not come in that way, but it will. And I think if that sounds honest and authentic, I hope it does, because I do think that's true.
Yes.
And I've tested most of this stuff myself, or I wouldn't be trying to be blathering around about it.
Yeah.
But I do find that for the losses I've experienced, something has grown, not, you know, something good will always come from here.
Yeah.
But back to that idea of everything happens for a reason. I don't really believe that, but I do think that good things do sometimes happen after one has experienced something not so good.
Yeah.
And it's apt to come right out of left field. And if we can keep our eyes open and be aware and anticipate that good can come again, I think we're very likely to see it and experience it.
Yeah.
So that, I guess that's kind of where I'd go with that it may not be the same kind of good, but it will be something. And I truly have had that
personally.
And I've witnessed it with family and friends and certainly people that I've worked with and patients.
Yeah.
And people in the hospital.
Well, I very much can feel that when you say it. I've talked to a lot of people over the years, and you have a tendency to get a feeling for when someone is being authentic and when they're not. And you certainly come across as someone who truly feels passionate about these words, and I have no doubt that you manage your life by them. Now, the book is called If I Could Mend Your Heart, and it's by Mary Farr, and that's F-A-R-R. It is available on Amazon, and obviously you can check that out. Now, we talked before the show, the publisher, Donna Kavanaugh, and you have been working out something for nonprofit organizations and other groups to get a hold of this book. I don't know what the details are. Do you want to add anything to that? I'm going to give the email address as well.
Well, I think the point is sometimes a church or an organization will call and say, you know, we really would like to do gift boxes, or we'd like to do something for 100 people or for 50 people or something like that.
Yeah.
And she has been offering them a very fair discount if that's something that appeals to people.
Okay.
And her email, if you want to share that with them, that would be fine.
Sure.
With others.
Yeah, absolutely. I have it right here. You can email Donna Kavanaugh, and the email address is donna@hopress-shorehousebooks.com. And if you're an organization, as Mary just spoke about, and you feel that this material could help people, do get a hold of Donna, and she will try to make it as easy as possible to get that information in their hands.
You know, there's something I would like to add about the book,
sure,
and that
absolutely.
Is the my niece illustrated it, and this was after her mother died at a very young age. And this was something that came up for her that she certainly wasn't expecting. But when I invited her to do the illustrations, she was thrilled, and it's launched her career as a graphic artist, and she's illustrating other books now, and it came right out of loss.
Wow, that is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Her name is Hannah Farr, and her picture is in it, too, and she's done beautiful illustrations.
That's fantastic. Now, where can people find out more about you? Website, social media, anything you would like to put out there so that maybe people can check out some of your online information?
I do have a website, and it's desiretoinspire.net, but it's actually desire-to-inspire.net. All the books are on there, and I blog a little, and I'd love to hear from people. It'd be wonderful.
Yeah, a lot of good information here, Mary. Once again, I'll say it one more time. The name of the book, If I Could Mend Your Heart by Mary Farr. Great book. Very hopeful book. Do check it out. Mary, thank you very much for sharing this information on the podcast today.
Well, I certainly appreciate being asked. This is wonderful. Thank you.
Yes. And we'd like to thank, obviously, Donna Kavanaugh, who suggested this, all the fine people at HumorOutcast.com, HO Press, Shore House Books. Thank you for listening to our podcast today, and we'll be talking to you again very soon.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.